From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A connection for this hour will be made this coming September when kids go back to school. I know, it's not even summer vacation yet, and today it feels more like winter break, but soon school districts will be planning for the 2014-2015 school year, and for some of them it will be time to implement pre-K programs. That's because New York passed a budget, passed a broader expansion of pre-K in the 2014 budget. New York City, from the numbers we've read, ended up with a roughly $300 million in pre-K funding this year. The rest of the state, we've heard around $40 million. We're going to get the full numbers and an understanding of where that money will go, which districts might be ready to offer pre-K, who will benefit. We want to hear from you this hour. What do you think about universal pre-K in New York State? And beyond pre-K, there are questions about what made the cut in this year's budget and what did not. From home visitation programs to funding for childcare to after-school programs, we're going to break it all down. Joining us for the hour is Jeff Kazurowski, the president of the Children's Agenda. Jeff, nice to see you again.
Thank you, Evan. It's nice to be here.
Carolyn Lee Davis is a policy analyst for the Children's Agenda. Carolyn, welcome back to Connections.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Well, Jeff, you and I talked a couple months ago, and we said when there's a budget, we're going to try to figure out what we've got and what we don't. And I was just asking you during the break what your biggest disappointment is. But in general, do you feel like this is a good budget for children's initiatives?
I think there are some modest gains for children in the state budget, and that will have some modest impacts here locally, but we could do better.
You can do better, and give me one specific, before we jump into what we know we have, where can we do better that we did not do this year?
We could do better around after-school funding for kids and the opportunities for that, and we could also do better, as my colleague Carolyn will tell us about, in the area of pre-K. And funding particularly for Rochester.
Okay, so, and we'll get to after-school programs coming up. If you want to join the conversation about different children's initiatives, what's funded, what's not, what you'd like to see, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Now, Carolyn Lee Davis, he talked about after-school. He mentioned that you think we could have done better with pre-K. Why do you say that?
There were modest gains also in pre-K this year, but I think the biggest gain, of course, will be seen in New York City. Rochester did really well in the spring to get in, and actually in the fall and winter to get additional money through a funding stream that was opened up. And so we were able to take many of our UPK programs full day. So Rochester's in really good shape. But when you look at the funding for the rest of the state, we're really not to that point where the governor had said he hoped to go in terms of truly universal statewide all four-year-olds being served. This is a step in that direction, but a lot of steps left to take.
All right. So with pre-K, the numbers I've seen, and someone like Carolyn is really well positioned to help understand if we have it right. What I've seen is $300 million for New York City, $40 million for the rest of the state. And regarding New York City, I've been told Joe Morelli was here trying to explain that the reason New York City ended up with $300 million for pre-K this year was they kind of front-loaded it for New York City to get a lot done now, whereas the state over the next 3 to 5 years is going to be spending somewhat more consistently on pre-K. Is that correct?
It's a little hard to tell what will be done in future years. Certainly, New York City is very much being front-loaded this year and getting the result of it. What this state budget really does is it sets open our third UPK program. So there's been a UPK program in place since 1997, which serves about 440 districts across the state. This past year, as I just mentioned, there was a new funding stream opened up, which New York City benefited from, Rochester benefited from, and then there was a little bit of money left over for the rest of the state. Rochester did great in it in getting a grant that was matched New York City's, and we were able to take the vast majority of our programs full day. So children now have a full day UPK option here in Rochester, which is fantastic. In terms of this third funding stream, what it really does is it creates a new pot of money for UPK. It's $40 million for across the state, and the difference here is that it doesn't just have to be high need districts. So any district across the state can apply for it. It's also open to charter schools and other CBOs applying.
Okay, so if your school district doesn't currently have UPK, Universal Pre-K, your district first has to apply to get the funding to get it started?
So, yes, this money is a competitive grant process.
It's a competitive grant. So this is – universal is probably not quite the correct word because if you're competing for a limited pot of money, it doesn't mean everybody's going to get it.
Right.
Okay. But we've heard from Assembly Majority Leader Morelli and others saying, look – by September, not every district would be ready to implement pre-K. Is that fair to say?
Sure. I would say there's a continuum for districts across the state, with some much more ready to go than others. But many of our districts, the vast majority, have some sort of pre-K already in place. And many districts are looking to go in this direction. So there's a real desire for many districts to have this.
Okay. So what more could have been done? I'll kick it over to Jeff.
Well, you know,
more funding for it?
I really want to underscore, actually, something that Carolyn said that's very important, which is sometimes in our community we have a sense that we can't achieve things for kids, that we're fighting the same battles over and over again. This year, the pre-K story for Rochester is a huge success and a seismic shift in the way that we do business.
For the Rochester district.
In Rochester,
for the city school
schools. And also, I want to really acknowledge the many community organizations that provide pre-K, because they came to the plate too and delivered. We in the space of a couple of months added 830 kids to full day pre-K in Rochester. That's huge in terms of the effectiveness and cost effectiveness that we know about for pre-K. It is really bodes well for the future educational success of those kids. And I really want to underscore the fact that we had a very good year this past year, and there were many people on a community level who contributed to that, and it will bode well for kids for the future. I mean, it's really a seismic shift in the way that we do business. On the other hand, you know, that's about 70% of our four-year-olds. Our three-year-olds in Rochester City Schools have very limited access to pre-K programs. Be wonderful to build toward that in the future as in association with the state budget.
All right. So when we're talking about pre-K for Rochester, we're talking about 4 years old.
That's right.
Okay. What did you want to see, or what can be done for the three-year-olds, Jeff?
Well, you know, three-year-olds can benefit from full-day pre-K too. Three-year-olds can benefit from quality early childhood experiences just as well as four-year-olds. As we've talked about before, Evan, you know, 70% of families in the city of Rochester work, have one parent or a single parent that works, or both parents works, and so their kids need access to high-quality stimulating experiences during the day, and that could happen at 3 years old or it could happen at 4 years old. At some point, we need to make sure that there's a continuum of things that kids need that are really effective, that help them and their parents in their early childhood years, and the payback on that is just incredible. I can talk about it in a moment, or Carolyn can talk about it, but there's just recent evidence this past month in the journal Science, maybe the most prestigious journal in all of health and science literature, showing the adult health impacts of quality early childhood experiences, and they're extraordinary.
This is a great time to jump into the return on investment. On Twitter, David said, ROI on pre-K, a lot of money for no tangible return. And what he means is, how do you know a tangible return? Well, Carolyn, what happened? What's Jeff talking about with the recent study?
So it's a great question. So in terms of return on investment, when we think about funding early childhood programs and programs for children in their youngest years, there's actually a lot of evidence that this is a critical time for us to invest as a community. What you want to do is you want to invest in preventive programs for kids, really 0 to 5, when that brain development is happening. And as Jeff just referenced, there's yet more evidence that has just come to light of long-term health outcomes. So these are health outcomes that we've seen improved because of kids being in UPK, in quality preschool. We're talking about comprehensive, high-quality early education programs when they're 2 and 3 and 4 years old. And these are showing up when they're in their 30s and 40s.
So this is a rather long-range, we call this a longitudinal study?
I believe we would.
Yes.
And so it's really amazing to think about something happening in your first couple of years of life and the long-term impacts on your life and the ROI. And when we look at ROI, we actually can see really positive incomes across a whole host of different impacts in the community. So not only are there those personal health impacts, which of course have community costs associated with them, by being in our community, being in better health, we're saving money as a community, but you also see a lot of positive impacts in terms of reduced use of the criminal justice system. You see reduced teen pregnancy. You see reduced dependence on the financial assistance programs in our community. So these are things taxpayers have to pay for, and they're saving taxpayers money when we get more kids into high-quality early education.
So these aren't just ideas anymore. This is something that we have now looked at with evidence.
Right. Yes.
And where can we find more on this, Jeff? Where did you say it was?
In the Journal of Science and the March 28th edition, there's a wonderful paper that shows, demonstrates the long-term impacts of child, of high-quality early childhood education. I think, Evan, it's there are two things that I'd say. One is, you know, Senator Moynihan had our former senator said everyone's entitled to their own opinion but not to their own facts. The facts on this are really clear. We're evidence-based that the Children's Agenda pre-K high-quality early childhood experiences pay off. They're both effective and cost-effective. And the analogy I just give is it's like, you know, it's like building a house or new construction downtown in Rochester. If you don't get the foundation right, you're always struggling to make up in terms of how you create that building. And this is about getting the foundation right. And it's no surprise that actually the effects are so stunning.
Before we get to the phones, and it's 263-WXXI, 263-9994, the state focusing on four-year-olds with pre-K, do we know what it would cost to expand to three-year-olds?
Well, so the way that three-year-olds in our community and many communities right now access quality early education is through child care subsidies. So there's equally high-quality settings for our young children in our community, but it's expensive, just like pre-K is expensive. And so for families to be able to pay for them, especially families who have lower incomes, subsidies are critical to opening up that door to a quality program, which helps get those children ready for school and doing better in life.
Can I ask, what's an example of one of the programs you're talking about?
Sure. Rochester is really lucky to have a lot of high-quality early education programs. So there's really high early education programs, family resource centers. Mary Jo Brock, who was here a couple months ago to talk about UPK, Rochester Child First Network. There's a host of high-quality programs. There's actually a collective of them called the ECQC, which is the Quality Council. It's those nonprofit centers in the city of Rochester who have committed to being accredited and licensed and providing high-quality care in our community.
Okay. So we're going to continue this conversation with our callers, and we'll stay on pre-K for a while, and then we're going to broaden it out and talk about some of the other items that did and did not make the cut this year. David and then Bonnie. Let's start with David. Go ahead, David. Thanks for calling Connections.
Yes. Thanks for the call. And Evan, thank you for your good job on this program. I listen to you all the time.
Well, thank you very much, David.
You're really doing wonderful. But folks, I'm very happy about the pre-K. It's just that your results that you said, I thought were very general. I'd like to hear specific outcomes for reading, math, social skills, et cetera, that pre-K actually shows, because those are the questions that people are going to ask who are critical of it, not me, but that's what people want to ask. The second thing I want to ask is, what's the teacher certification requirements for a pre-K? Is it a regular certified teacher? Is it early childhood degree? What kind of degree? 2 or 4? Thank you.
David, thanks for calling. And you want to hit? Let's hit the first part of that question.
So, David, I'll talk about some of the real-life impacts because I think that's even more important than tests. Kids are more likely to graduate from high school. Kids are less likely to be involved in violence or to be getting pregnant as teenagers or getting other kids pregnant as teenagers. They're much more likely to be gainfully employed. They have less mental health problems. In terms of the recent paper in Science, actually, it's incredible. They have are less likely to have high blood pressure, and they're less likely to be obese. And this is all from high-quality early childhood programs. And the evidence is very consistent over time that those real-life outcomes are, in fact, attainable and true. Carolyn.
Yeah, and I would just add to that to say that Rochester's really lucky to have actually have had in place an evaluation system that has looked at our UPK programs for over 10 years. And so this evaluation system looks at children when they come into the UPK classrooms, and then it looks at children at the end of the UPK year, and it's called RECAP. And that program, what it does is it tracks child growth. So it tracks to see, are children growing during this UPK year? And are they growing the way we'd expect them to, the way four-year-olds across the country are or aren't growing, or are they not? And what this has shown, with more than 10 years of data behind it, is that our children grow at least 18 months in that nine-month period. So thanks to going to a half-day program for 9 months, we see 18 months of developmental growth for our four-year-olds in our Rochester programs.
When it comes to just following what David said, and I'm trying to interpret his question a little bit more, Does the journal that you're talking about, and does the study reference even more specifics? I mean, you say they are less likely to be obese. Do we know how much less likely? Are they, you know, blood pressure? Do we know what the actual difference? I imagine the study lays it out a little bit more.
Well, I can go into great detail on that. It turns out for the adults in the study, the blood pressure in the group of kids that got the intervention was normal. It was about 126. The systolic blood pressure normal is 120 over 80. For those who didn't get it, it was 148. The number of kids who had obesity and prediabetes, the number of adults from those kids who had obesity and prediabetes, about a quarter of the kids who didn't get high-quality early childhood education had obesity and prediabetes. In the group that got that, it was less than 10%. So really marked differences. And it makes, and it sounds incredible, but it really is something that we are learning is consistently true and that science has demonstrated over time, which is that there's a critical window for kids, and this is my pediatric role, my role as a pediatrician. There's a critical window for kids between 0 and 5 where if we get the fundamentals right, it can have long-term, long-lasting impact in their health outcomes, in their educational life outcomes, in their real life happiness and employment outcomes.
All right, so we saw state funding for pre-K increase this year, and as Jeff and Carolyn have said, a big win for the city of Rochester. Other districts may have to compete for it, and perhaps we'll see year to year an increase that will provide more pre-K for 4 years old. For 3 years old, as Carolyn was saying, that's more child care subsidies, and that's a kind of a different arena, but do we have an idea for what the state could spend? Is there a proposal out there for the state to invest so much more and what it could be?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. There is a proposal. So,
and by the way, I wasn't just teeing up a softball. I truly don't know the answer to that.
Well, there hasn't always been an answer, but this year there was an answer. So this year, with work led by the Winning Beginnings Coalition, which Winning Beginnings is a coalition of groups, experts, researchers, providers across the state who work on different issues facing children. And in particular, it really looks at children across ages. And so it does work around childcare, it does work around UPK, it does work around after school, home visiting, a whole host of issues for kids. They really led the work to create a Believe in Children campaign, which was the first one of the first efforts to really come together and say, okay, I provide after school, but I know early childhood is important. And for the other side, for early childhood folks, to say, I know after school is important. And as a result, came up with three specific asks that this coalition carried, which one was for universal child care, one was for universal pre-K, and one was for universal after school and with dollars attached.
Okay.
In terms of universal child care, we need a lot of money. So about $1 billion is spent currently on child care subsidies across the state. And we believe that serves between 10 and 20% of the children who are eligible. So the state sets eligibility, but then it's not universal right now. It's not mandated. So it doesn't fund child care to serve every child that they say is eligible. And so to really serve all the children who are eligible, we need about $2 billion. So we need to double our investment.
So another $1 billion.
So another $1 billion.
And Jeff, you've talked to politicians many, many times, and they tell you it's hard to move that much of a mountain in Albany. I know you can go to them and tell them, look at the return on investment. Look what the science says. But $1 billion more, is that realistic for next year? Is that realistic ever with the way the state is currently structured with its finances?
Sure. Sure, it's realistic. It's a matter of priorities. Let's not forget that the state budget is about $130 billion. Carolyn's right. We took a step forward this year on child care subsidies, and thanks to the good work of in large part to her good work as part of the Winning Beginning Coalition, we really had some success. And it's a matter of increasing that intentionally and deliberately year after year to get to a point where we're serving the kids who need this. And again, Evan, I know we've talked about this before. These are all kids in working families. These are parents who are doing the right thing. They're working hard to try and make ends meet, but childcare can be very expensive. It can cost more than SUNY tuition, $10,000 to $12,000 per kid per year in Monroe County. So these are families that are doing the right stuff, but they need help, and they need some help to get their kids into these experiences that are quality, and that will pay off in terms of their attention at work, their ability to work and do the right thing, and advance their own lives and their own and the lives of their family members. And it will also help those kids ultimately down the road, as we've been talking about.
That extra $1 billion, as Jeff says, is less than 1% of the state budget, but still a hard mountain to convince lawmakers to go there. We'll see how it goes in the future. Let's get back to the phones. Bonnie in Rochester, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to point out, you talked about the budget in relationship to this issue. I just want to point out a couple things that often aren't talked about in forums like this regarding the current budget and, you know, past budgets as well. But by restoring the more progressive tax structures in New York that they had in the 1970s, we could raise an additional $30 billion more. $15 billion from stock transfer taxes that have often now gone to Wall Street. Another $8 billion from more progressive income taxes, especially on the most wealthy. $7 billion from cuts to corporate tax breaks. So, you know, it's important to have the whole picture because often while, you know, money is always kind of a tight issue, on the other hand, how you spend it, and the governor, not unlike other governors, of course, but this governor has chosen to make those decisions, and the money that the areas I just listed would provide additional $30 billion more that would cover a lot of these issues. So I think it's not really accurate to keep saying that there isn't the money or that we can't do it. We can do it. It's a matter of who gets attention. And frankly, often the poorest people in this country, including people of color, are the ones that do not get as much attention. It's good we have some increase in preschool. However, it's a disgrace that it's taken so many, many years to even get to this point. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Bonnie. Real briefly there, and I know we've got a caller with a cell phone battery running low. We're going to try to get you in just a quick second. Bonnie's points sound closer to what Bill de Blasio was saying in New York City, which is, you know, we're going to pay for this by asking people who are doing better to shoulder the burden, excuse me. And Governor Cuomo was not comfortable with that. Jeff, what do you think in terms of ways to fund?
Yeah, well, I think Bonnie is right. It is about more or less available to spend, but it's also, frankly, about two other things. It's about our kids a priority, our kids and working families a priority for this governor, for this administration, for our local leadership. I think Assemblyman Morelli, Senator Robach really went to bat for kids and working families around this issue of child care subsidies. And then the last thing I'd say is it's not just a matter of more or less, it's a matter of what. One of the things that we really harp on at the Children's Agenda is that there are effective ways to spend our resources. And what we need to be doing is to, as my friend Jim Brush from Century Safe says, is spending the next available dollar on something we're really sure is going to deliver a return on investment. So I agree broadly with Bonnie that we need more investment in effective programs for kids.
And if Brian Sampson from Unshackle Upstate were here, he would say New York is still last when it comes to business climate, taxes, et cetera. And if you went with Bonnie's solution, yes, you may be able to help more kids and families, but you would drive more people out of the state. There's got to be another way. You sensitive to that?
I'm totally sensitive to that, and I think we also need to recognize that there are creative ways to do funding that don't require taxes on businesses. There's things that we've talked about before on this program, social impact bonds that monetize the return on investment and allow for early investment in kids. I also think that, Annie Casey Foundation says that New York State, our state, right, which has this incredible history of progressive leadership, of leadership around women's rights, around the abolitionist movement, we rank 29th out of 50 states in terms of the well-being of our kids. We're below average. So I think we need to prioritize kids more in the state budget.
All right, let's get to a caller who's on a low cell phone battery. That's Mike in Irondequoit. Mike, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. And we'll hope it hangs out. I've been thinking for a long time that the state is going to spend money. There's no question about that. The question is, what are we going to do with it? We can either invest in early childhood education at the tune of $4,000 to $7,000, maybe $10,000 a year, or we can invest in prisons where prisoners cost us $100 plus $100,000 a year. It's an either or, and the pipeline is well known and well understood. Now, somebody else has said, we don't have a spending problem. We have priority problems. And unless we want to keep investing in prisons, that's the way the money's going to go. And the for-profit prison folks are going to be delighted because that's where the money's going to end up. Thanks for letting me have my two cents worth.
There you go, Mike. Thanks for calling. Quick reaction, Dr. Kazarowski.
Sure. You know, you're exactly right. One of the things that if Carolyn and I were could show you a slide right now, we show a slide very frequently about brain development and how we spend money as in the United States and also in New York State. And they're very inversely correlated. It's almost you couldn't imagine actually drawing a worse curve because we hardly spend any money early on for kids, relatively speaking, even though we know that a lot of brain development is happening and the payoff could be incredible. Instead, what we end up doing is exactly what the caller said, which is that we end up spending money after the fact on very expensive and ineffective interventions.
When you talked about making a decision that the next dollar we spend, that we have to be focused on our priorities, and that the next dollar that's available, we make sure it goes to children's programs, that it makes sure it goes to child care, et cetera. I wonder what you thought, and this is not to disparage the mayor, but Rochester's mayor, Lovely Warren, asked the state for $100 million for a performing arts center. And she believes in it, and she's going after this money, and she thinks that this is a center point for redeveloping downtown. And I'm curious to know if you think that conflicts with the very notion of looking at the priority for the next dollar, saying we still have this need.
I think it's not an either-or, and I think that Mayor Warren and the city did a terrific job of delivering on $6 million that would come from the state this year to help around our poverty issue in the city of Rochester. And my great hope would be that they did a great job to deliver on that, and my great hope would be that we'll figure out a way to use those resources to reduce the effects of poverty on kids or to lift kids and families out of poverty. I think it's not an either or. I think we need to be conscious of the needs of kids. And, you know, in the city of Rochester, about 90% of kids live in relative poverty. So this is a big, bad problem. You know, Evan, the thing that a lot of people don't realize is how bad this problem is in the United States as a whole. In Rochester, it's very acute. But in the United States in general, it's nearing 50% of kids living in relative poverty. So I just go back to, you know, we can have all sorts of priorities. Carolyn and I are here because in an independent, nonpartisan way, we think that the priority and what would save our community is to invest more money in kids.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Jeff Kazarowski and Carolyn Lee Davis from the Children's Agenda, talking about what did and what did not make the cut in this year's state budget. You just heard Jeff mention $6 million additional for Rochester. We're going to take a very, very short break. If you're on the phone, wait there. We will get to you. And we want to come back and we'll explain what that $6 million is that he's talking about. What else is in the budget and what's not? What about after-school programs? How about combating poverty, as he mentioned there? How are we going to do it, and especially with this year's budget? We're breaking it all down for you this hour. I'm Evan Dawson, and you're listening to Connections on member-supported public radio. See, that's why we call it the shortest break in radio, and we're right back here on Connections. If you're living in the city of Rochester and you're a Time Warner Cable customer, you can watch us on City 12 today, and we hope you're doing that. I've got color-coordinated socks and shirt today, so that's just perfect timing for all this. Our guests for the hour are from the Children's Agenda, talking about the budget, and before we get back to that, let me bring in another caller, John in Rochester. Thanks for calling, John.
Hey, Evan. I always hear this phrase that we have we're one of the poorest cities as far as children go in the United States, but I think we have the wealthiest poor in the United States, in New York State. If you consider in these statistics, subsidies such as food stamps, Section 8 rents, free health care, et cetera. You start adding that up, costs that a middle-income family has to pay, their standard of living is very high. And I have to say, I was brought up in a low-income housing project myself back in the 1950s. So I'm not unfamiliar with poverty, but the point I want to make is on the education, that I like the pre-K concept. However, I think before we throw any more money at an education system, especially in the cities, which is failing, we need to reform the education system with a voucher system, competition from the private sector. The public sector, and I think a lot of these new jobs probably will be public sector jobs. We need to reform that system and create competition from the private sector, and not strengthen this public sector that's out of control. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, John, thanks for the call. I'm going to let our guests start. Let me start with Dr. Kazurowski, because he gave you a lot there. And let's take the points one by one here. Competition with the private sector. What do you think?
Well, that's worked so well in healthcare. I mean, really, it hasn't worked well in healthcare at all. I mean, I can speak to that in my role in pediatrics. We have the highest costs for healthcare in the developed world, and we have some of the poorest health outcomes. So I am a little reluctant to think about moving our educational system in the same direction. I understand that that creating excellence in models like can happen in charter schools is something that we want to strive for. But I don't think the answer for education, frankly, is to create competitive models. I don't think that that's worked well in healthcare at all. And I think that for kids, it isn't about competition. It's about collectively as a community doing what kids and families need. I do believe that what John said is true. We need to do a better job.
And I would agree with John that if you compare our standard of poor to Haiti, our poor are doing just fine. I mean, there you can look at any parts of the world and see much more impoverished. But what did you think when you hear him say, hey, our poor aren't doing that bad when you look at all the things that pile up for them?
Well, I think, you know, John, I'm glad that you're pointing out that we try and do things to help people. You know, I think when you're 3 years old, you should be able to eat. And there's nothing that I'm aware of in the United States that says that is dependent upon your zip code or who your parents are. So I think it's very important that we do things in New York State to try and help people living in poverty or near poverty so that they can have the basic necessities of life. I think that my colleague Bridget Hurley has a lot of expertise around poverty, and one of the things that she's done is to look at the impact of those poverty reduction programs. And it doesn't turn out to be true that that they overly compensate for the lack of income or the lack of wealth for many families. They help many families, but we still, even with those programs, fare far worse than most other developed worlds in terms of kids' access to good nutrition, for example.
Yeah, and I would just add to that to say, you know, at Children's Agenda, we do a lot of looking at the numbers. And when you look at the numbers for our community, we've got about 40% of children who are living in poverty. And when you just look at that number, that means for a mom and two children, that's less than $15,000 a year, yeah, who are trying to survive on $15,000 a year with all these supports in place. That's when you even just take out rent or childcare one piece, you can see quite quickly that it's really hard for a family to try to survive that kind of income.
John mentioned failing schools in Rochester, and that's a whole separate debate for another day, but there is a real chicken and an egg debate about whether are the schools failing because of poverty, or are we in poverty because the schools are failing? And I know, Dr. K, that there's a real feeling that if you could raise the standard of living from the average family, that schools would improve, that poverty is a tough place to start for kids to go and perform well in school, that they're not getting nutritional help, that they don't have a lot of support at home. And I can tell you that as a father of a two-year-old, my wife and I have said many times, I don't know how single mothers do it. I'm amazed at what they have to go through, and I would love to see a society where there's a lot less of that, but that's a much more complicated problem.
Yeah, you know, we use these terms like poverty, and what they really mean is people don't have access to the basic things that they need to be able to thrive, to live. For kids, that can be incredibly devastating, especially for young children. You know, we're, as you just pointed out, we're talking about food and shelter. We're talking about kids who are homeless. We're talking about kids whose neighborhoods are very violent, where other people are struggling to make ends meet and making bad choices. And this is all the what's surrounding kids who are, you know, elementary school students in the city of Rochester. It's not an either or. We need better schools. We also need to get at the root problems of this issue of poverty and the lack of the essential things that kids need to thrive.
All right, let's have Carolyn, if we could, explain this $6 million question. Now, the city of Rochester and lawmakers decided to give the city an extra $6 million in this budget. And if you haven't followed the debate that every year Rochester and Buffalo and Syracuse have about parity, this is not part of the what they call the AIM funding formula, the aid to municipalities. This is just an extra $6 million for 1 year only to do what, Carolyn?
The goal of it really is to alleviate poverty in the community, and that's a broad and, as we've just been speaking to, incredibly important goal for this community. And so there's a lot of flexibility is our understanding of how these dollars can be used. It is, though, I think the real challenge is that it's a one-time gift of money. And so when you think about, I think the challenge is thinking about what can you do with $6 million that's one-time use that will really have a long-lasting impact. Luckily, as we've been speaking to this hour, we know that there are things that work. So child care subsidies does lift families up out of poverty. Investing in UPK lifts families out of poverty and helps get children ready for school. There's ways that you can spend money. Jeff mentioned a little while ago social impact bonds, investing money up front and then seeing monetizing some of that return on investment might be a possible use for this money. There's a variety of ways that you could use this money to really impact the community for good. And the challenge is just thinking about what are those different ways to use that pot and do the best good for our community.
That's up to the Warren administration?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll have to see how they decide to use it. And I have a feeling that the Children's Agenda will give them some ideas on what to do with that. 263-WXX. 263-9994. Now, Jeff, at the start of the hour, you said one of your biggest disappointments in the 2014 budget is after-school programs. Why is that?
Yeah, so there was no new funding for after-school programs for kids. There was a small increase in funding for some youth summer employment programs, so we're happy about that. It was $2.5 million statewide, so not a lot. But this is another one of those things that, you know, to get back to a theme that we know about in terms of effectiveness, that high-quality after-school programs that contain both academics as well as non-academic components really do have long-term impact for kids. Our business leaders in our community, many of our community organizations, are always trying to figure out how to supply additional activities for kids that help them to grow into productive adults. And they're lots of ideas about that, and it's disappointing that the state budget doesn't allow for any more of that, because what we know on a state level is it's a small fraction of kids who can't afford them who have access to quality after-school programs.
So what are the kinds of after-school programs that you like that we can see more of?
After-school programs, in our community, there are, as we talked about before, there are many good providers of after-school programs. Important things in after-school programs is to include some academics, but also to include some non-academic things, to include some things like sports recreation,
yeah,
and music and art, because those things actually, it turns out those things pay off incredibly in terms of benefits for the children who are involved with them as well. So Carolyn actually led work here with the After School Alliance on what makes up a quality after school program. And I'd like to turn it over to her to talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that exact thing. A few years back, actually, the city stepped forward and with great community partners around the table, including the Rochester Area Community Foundation, the United Way, GRASA, which is the Greater Rochester After School Alliance, to really say if we were going to really increase the number of after school programs we had in the community, what would be most important for those programs to look like? And so it was about a 4-month long process with folks really investing a lot of time to look at the research. The After School Corporation from New York City came in and helped this process out, and so looked at the models and what was most important, and as a result came up with the Rochester After School Model that includes the components that Jeff was just speaking to. So it needs to build on academics, but in unique ways. So often we hear of the example of using cooking to work on math skills, for example. It also really needs to have fun. It needs to have well-trained staff who are good at creating relationships with kids, and it needs to include a snack and dinner. It needs to cover those hours. We know, and I think folks have heard this a lot in Rochester, that those hours after school are a really vulnerable time for children.
What time? I always thought 3 to 5. It's more than 3 to 5.
It's more than 3 to 5. Really, here it's sort of like 2 to 6, and the evening hours are still a challenge as well. Actually, it comes down a little bit after 6:30, but there's still a lot of times of struggle, and those are times where kids are most likely to either be the victim of a crime or to be a perpetrator of a crime. And so there are hours that are really important to have kids to have options that they want to be engaged in and go to, that not only keep them safe, but then are also contributing to their development.
2 to 6 are the hours they're more likely to be involved in crime.
Yeah, it's those hours after school, and it's those hours where they're more likely to be a victim.
See, I think a lot of people might think that's late at night and those kind of things, and it's not the case.
Yeah, when you look at the research, it really is that first core of hours after school.
If the state made a sweeping investment in after school, are there staffs and people who are trained to handle those kind of programs?
Yeah, I mean, again, Rochester is lucky to have pockets of really high quality after school programs in this community. There's been a lot of work done both by the Rochester After School Alliance, but also one of the outcomes that came out of that work a couple of years ago is that United Way instituted that model into their after school giving. So when they give money to a program that wants to provide after school, they point those programs to look at the model to incorporate those components into what they're doing. There's also an evaluation process that's in place in our community that a number of our after-school programs are part of, so that we're tracking the outcomes for these programs, and so we can point to them and say, what are we getting for them? So, yes, if there was an investment of funding, we would have a lot of high-quality providers here who could serve more kids who really need this opportunity.
Jeff, another thing that the Children's Agenda was looking at was home visitation. What's home visitation?
In the spectrum of early childhood experiences, these are programs that help parents, young parents, with their children to get them on the right track early on. And I would say it's hard to be a good parent if you haven't had good parenting. One of the things as a pediatrician that I recognize all the time is that I can play an important role in helping parents, but many of the times my resources are insufficient, that parents need additional help, that they want to do a good job raising their young children. And home visitation programs are voluntary. And one of the things that parents can turn to, in addition to pediatric care, in addition to child care, that can help them. And it's like the child care story and the pre-K story writ all over again. The effectiveness and cost effectiveness of home visitation programs has really been well studied, and it's incredibly positive, particularly for low-income families, families living in poverty or maybe under lots of stress, single-parent families. Our United Way and our Rochester Area Community Foundation and our funding community has really tried to both make investments in and harness the investments of government in home visitation programs because of their impact on kids. And in the state budget, there's some good news. So there are a few different ways that home visitation programs might be funded in our community via the state budget. One is through line items. And so there were some line items that were specifically dedicated to home visitation that were increased this year. Another is the governor has a social impact bond proposal, to return to that theme, that might actually benefit a home visitation program called the Nurse Family Partnership, which exists in our community. Remains to be seen whether there will be funding sufficiently in the budget to benefit that program. And then the third thing is that there is the state has worked with the federal government to have a Medicaid waiver to reinvest savings that the state has accrued from the Medicaid program in different ways. And they're talking about investing, again, in home visitation, particularly in a home visitation program called the Nurse Family Partnership Program.
So during a home visitation, what are the things that will happen? Give me a sense for how that works.
Yeah, so home visitation programs are delivered by professional staff, and they start sometimes prenatally, sometimes at the birth of a child, and they do a whole variety of things. They, in many of the best models, actually, they help parents to be better parents, to also develop their own sense of where they want to go with their future, to find employment, to complete their schooling. The models are different depending on who the provider is. For nurse home visitation programs, obviously, they can help with things like immunizations. They can help with things like nutrition. They can help with things that are more medically oriented. For home visitation programs that are run by social workers or other professional staff, they may be more inclined to focus on issues of child development or issues of connection with social services. Again, across the spectrum of home visitation programs, there isn't a one model that fits all, but taken collectively, they're very effective and cost-effective in terms of their impact for kids and families.
You want to jump in there, Carolyn? Does that cover it pretty well?
I think that covers it really well. I just think I totally agree with what Jeff's saying, and just say that it's really laying the foundation for putting families on track for being as strong as they can possibly be.
And Jeff, we could talk about so many different health issues that young children, if these are addressed, they're in better shape for their future, and if they're not, et cetera. You mentioned immunizations. Kids in poverty versus kids not in poverty, what's the difference in immunizations?
Nationally, it's significantly decreased. Actually, in our community, Evan, this is a success story
wow.
of our community around home visitation and also around outreach for immunizations. We don't have very much difference, actually.
Wow.
So
it's good to hear.
One of the other things that we should build on as a community is when we figured out things that work, like our pre-K seismic shifts and success story this year, the work that we've done in terms of delivering immunizations, we have to build on those successes and acknowledge those successes.
And no doubt immunizations that's a perfect example of with the right kind of community approach, you can make an impact.
That's right. That's yeah. right. Too often I think we look at the big bad problems, and I'm not trying to trivialize those, and we say, oh, the world's a terrible place. Kids are just going to suffer, and that is just not true. There are all sorts of effective things that we can do for kids and families, things that really work for them. We just need to prioritize them, raise the level of those success stories, and build on those models.
All right. So we're going to talk, we're going to wrap the hour over the next 5 minutes or so with folks from the Children's Agenda talking about what's next on their wish list and what they'd like to see happen next for children in Western Upstate Finger Lakes area of New York. And Wendy on Twitter asks us, I missed it, who's getting pre-K? Well, this is a good point for us to kind of go back and say, let's wrap the pre-K discussion. If you missed that, Jeff and Carolyn have been telling us that Rochester's done well, that Rochester's going to see a surge in this, but not necessarily non-city districts. So what's likely come September to change, Carolyn, with pre-K? Who's likely to get it?
Yeah, so what really this budget does for the state outside of New York City is it puts forth an additional $40 million that any district can competitively apply for. So certainly districts surrounding Rochester may apply for those dollars and could, and it's not – high needs is not the only determining factor this time around, and so a number of our districts could have a good shot if they wanted to go for it. So that's waiting to be seen. The challenge and the opportunity here to grow on in future years is that $40 million is a first step forward, and it's putting the additional dollars in years to come to really ramp up across the state the way that New York City will be able to ramp up this year.
So come September, not every district will have pre-K. Pre-K will not be universal, but we will see more of it, right?
Yes.
And then we'll see in over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years if those investments continue, and we'll see a spreading of pre-K. Okay, Dr. Kazurowski, now that we've got this budget under our belt and there were, in your view, successes and disappointments, what's top of the list for what's next for helping kids and families?
Child care subsidies. I think even though we had some success and their success will impact our community, again, I just go back to child care support as being so helpful in two ways. One is that it takes into consideration working families that are trying to lift themselves out of poverty, and it helps them. And the other is providing access to kids to high-quality early childhood experiences really pays off in the long term in terms of their growth and development, and avoiding what David talked about, I think it was David, you know, of these terrible outcomes that we end up paying, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for, like prison or pregnancy or whatever.
Yeah, I would have to completely agree with that and say child care subsidies too, especially when you also think that child care subsidies is assisting kids and families and kids aged up to age 13. So it's helping our infants, our toddlers, kids as they enter school and need those after school programs, and our older elementary school children to pay for after school programs too. And we know that we have a long way to go. We're serving less than 40% here in our community, and we really need a lot more of it.
When Jeff was on in February, we had a caller say, shouldn't we be more focused on making sure there aren't single parents to begin with, and there aren't unwed parents, and there aren't single moms? And I don't think the children's agenda would disagree that that's an issue, but it looks to me like you can't ignore the fact that that's happening and that there are children who are essentially penalized or potentially penalized with a lack of resources.
I agree with that. Of course, we want kids to grow up in loving families with nurturing parents and with lots of caregivers that can help them. But that isn't the reality for some kids. And the question is, what are we practically going to do tomorrow? These are some of the answers. Evan, I wanted to just go back to say, in addition to, you know, I thought you asked a really important question about what next for the state budget. But in terms of the impact of the state budget, we really have to capitalize on the home visitation opportunities. Mm-hmm. This community, that could lay the groundwork for entrance into three-year-old child care and pre-K. We have an opportunity that we really need to seize as a community to bring home visitation dollars here in a greater amount to this community and get kids, get kids to the point where that continuum of that then moves into childcare and pre-K can be a success story. And so home visitation was a success in the state budget. Now we need to bring the dollars here and the reality here to our kids and families.
All right. For our listeners who want to learn more, you've got a lot online. Where do they find you online?
www.thechildrensagenda.org.
Jeff Kazarowski, thanks. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Evan.
Carolyn Lee Davis, always nice to talk to you.
Thanks.
And she helps us understand the number side so well. We appreciate that. And thanks to you for joining us, whether you're on City 12, on Time Warner Cable in the city of Rochester, or listening maybe in your car, online, or elsewhere. I'm Evan Dawson. Love the community that we're forming with Connections. We'll see you right back here on a Thursday.
This program is a production of WXXI Public Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of WXXI staff, management, or underwriters. The broadcast is meant for the private use of our audience. Any rebroadcast or use in another medium without the expressed written consent of WXXI is strictly prohibited. If you'd like a CD copy of this program, please send $20 to WXXI Radio, P.O. Box 30021, Rochester, New York, 14603. Please specify the topic, date, and time of the broadcast. This is WXXI AM Rochester and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.